Hello and welcome to A Voice of a People, live here with Linda Sims on WGH Talk. Hold on, please. Hello?
Hello.
Damon?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Linda. Could you just stay on the phone, but just hold on while I can finish opening up my show, okay?
Sure.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Once again, you are listening to Linda Sims here live on WGH Talk. The name of the show is called A Voice of a People. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You have the opportunity to download from your Play Store or your App Store a TuneIn app. Once you download that app, you search WWGH. Or you can call in live during a live broadcast, which you can't do that today because the guest is on the phone. If you have any questions or need to make any comments, I need to share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street of Marion, Ohio. Phone number there is 740-382-8552. We also have Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They have an ongoing announcement, free produce, every third Saturday of every month. This will take place November the 19th from 12 noon until 2 p.m. Also, they will be having a drive-through Thanksgiving dinner pickup. Same location, 582 Lee Street. This takes place November the 23rd, which will be Thanksgiving Eve. It begins at 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. So please share this information with others. Inspect Ohio, LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 30 years of experience working for you. The owner is Cheryl Lee. The location is LaRue, Ohio. Phone number there is 740-262-0939. I'd like to start my show off with a thought for today. This thought is titled Celebration. Celebration every day is a celebration because instead of waiting for happy endings, we open our eyes to the wonder of life, to see the humor and magic in each moment, delighted in the way things turn out, amazed at the beauty of it all. I thought that was so sweet to open up today with. Celebrate. Now, I will turn my attention to my guest today. I'm so excited about Damon Mosley being on my show. He is an author, and I went to one of his book signings in Delaware, Ohio, at their library. How are you doing today, Damon?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
Oh, doing great. I'm glad we finally got it straightened out. At the top of the hour, commercials come on, right? And they run till sometimes 10:15, and then my show starts up. And then at the top of the hour, we will go off and come back on again at 11:15.
Okay.
So I do have these time slots set apart for you. And how have you been?
I've been well. You know, it's since we first met at the Delaware event, there's been a couple of more events that I've done. Both here and in Virginia. So I couldn't be happier with the momentum that the book is generating and the conversations that have come about as a result of it.
That is great. And this is the last book you authored is Smile.
Yes, no, it's that's the most recent one. I did a children's book way back in 2008. But this is my most recent offering. It's a photography book. Of course, it has an introduction and some captions, but it was just my most recent one that I've done, and I'm pretty excited about it.
I am too. I want you to tell us a little bit more about you and, you know, a little bit about your childhood and how you came to be the person you are today.
Sure. I was born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, on the east side, born in the city, to a single mom, very, very loving, very, you know, I was growing up in the church as far as, you know, having to go to Sunday school and children's choir and all that stuff. And she had a real big focus on education. So I ended up getting a scholarship to a boarding school in Virginia. It's called Woodbury Forest School. It's near Charlottesville. From there, I had a scholarship to Columbia University in New York City, and ended up moving back home to Columbus, where I am now. But my upbringing was, like I said, my mom was very focused on education. Took me to the library and the museums and the theater, you know, anytime she could. Mm-hmm. So I think it was at that point I developed my love for the arts and kind of found my passion for writing.
Wow, so you found that at an early age.
Oh, yeah. I think that, I think writing is kind of a natural extension of anyone who reads a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just kind of, you just kind of absorb words and stories. And, you know, like I said, she would take me to the library every Saturday and bookstores and things like that. And she was an avid reader herself. So I think writing is just kind of a natural extension of that.
Okay. So how was your, like, school age, like elementary? How was it for you? Did you have a lot of struggles or knowing who you were or, you know, how did you relate to other children?
I was pretty well adjusted in elementary school. I had a lot of friends. I was pretty popular as you could be in elementary school. But I think because I had a lot of I'm an only child, so my personality is such that it's very easy for me to make friends because I've always had to do so. You know, I didn't have any siblings to kind of usher me into social groups or cliques. So just making new friends became second nature to me. And, yeah, I didn't have many struggles growing up at all as far as making friends and adjusting to other people.
Well, that's great. How did you stay away from the wrong crowd?
You know, it's funny because growing up in the inner city, that's definitely, it's easy to do, mm-hmm. you know, to fall into the wrong crowd. But my mom kept me in so many activities, you know, from piano lessons to Boy Scouts to, you know, I was always doing stuff. You know, I didn't have a lot of time to hang out. So I think that was part of what kept me out of trouble. And then I'd have to also say that, you know, just, I would say her, my mom's very, she's very much into the church, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. I think I had a good moral compass at an early age. I might not have understood everything that was going on as far as religion and all that stuff, but I knew basic right from wrong, and I definitely didn't want to disappoint her, so
right.
I think the combination of those things kept me on the right path.
So you also attended church as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was mandatory growing up.
You know, some people say, well, we was in church from Monday to Sunday. Was it like you do?
Oh, yes. You know, because you had choir practice on Monday, then you had Bible study on Tuesday. It was so, you know, then my mom's choir practice on Thursday, and then, you know, it was, yeah, we were in church often. And that was something that it became a routine. And, you know, I'm an only child, but my mom has several siblings, and that's just the kind of family, you know, that she came from. She kind of, you know, in our smaller family unit, I think she kind of duplicated that from what she knew growing up.
That's great. I appreciate your mother. Because it takes a wise mother, really, to raise a son anyway. Especially,
yes, ma'am, for sure.
You know, one child, her only child, of course, and she had great expectations for you, and she did not want you to become a statistic, you know.
Oh, yeah, you were absolutely right.
And so many mothers, they don't have that insight, or they go about it the wrong way, especially with these one young man with one parent.
Yeah. I can say that that's one thing that I give my mother a lot of credit for a lot of things, but I think the biggest thing that she instilled upon me was a sense of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes when you have single moms of sons in particular, they kind of baby them, you know, they coddle them, and they kind of make excuses for them when they do get in trouble or step outside the lines. But my mother was the exact opposite. You know, if everybody did something wrong, she would not, you know, she'd always say, I'll support you as long as you stay on the path. You know, over here, on this side of the path, there's love and there's support and there's help. If you go off the script, you're on your own. Mm. And she meant it. So, yeah, you know, it was like, yeah, hey, I'll help you. As long as you follow the path, we're good. But the moment you want to go on your own and try it your way, hey,
I'm out.
How about it?
Those were stern words, and I'm sure you felt them in your heart, didn't you?
Oh, yes, yes. You know, I was more afraid of her than anything on the street, you know, so I think, again, that's what kept me on the right path, because I know when I came home, there would be no excuses, there would be no coddling. You know, my grades had to be right, my chores had to be right, so therefore my behavior had to be right. And again, she wasn't super strict, she was just firm, and she laid out a plan and let me know what the consequences would be, you know, if I deviated from that plan. But it wasn't super strict at all. I don't want to paint that picture. It was just, you know, she said, my job is to go to work and to provide for the house. Your job is to go to school, do your chores. So we had a nice breakdown of responsibilities in the house.
Right. My spiritual mother and mentor gave me these tips. Be fair with your children, be firm with your children, and be consistent.
I agree.
It seems like you had that type of mother.
I agree. Yes, mixed signals are probably the hardest thing. Now, I don't have any children of my own, but, you know, and I've had a lot of godchildren, and I've mentored a lot of youngsters coming up, and I will say that, you know, you have to be consistent and firm, like you said, and mixed signals are, that's really the enemy of child raising, because, you know, if you want to give someone guidance, isn't it a firm hand at the wheel?
Mm-hmm.
So they can, you know, everyone likes to know that the person in charge knows what they're doing. And, you know, if you send mixed signals and if you're inconsistent, it's just very hard for a young mind to navigate that path if they can't really see where it's leading to all the way.
That's true. Any mind, not just young ones.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
You have to speak with clarity so people can understand where you're coming from, you know, what you're really trying to say. Sometimes we can go all the way around the mulberry bush and back and still haven't made any sense at all.
Precision is key. That is correct.
Well, you know, sometimes I think that parents are afraid that they're going to hurt the child by being consistent and being firm with them, you know?
Yeah.
And just dismiss their behavior. I see a lot of that, especially with a lot of these young mothers.
I think you're right, and I think the fear, you know, especially if you're a single parent, I think the fear is that if you anger your child, you will damage the relationship, and, you know, you're already trying so hard to be both parents and to wear both hats. The last thing you probably want to do is have that child be upset with you or to damage the relationship. But you kind of have to have the foresight of knowing there will be some times when your child will be upset with you, and that's fine. Because you're the adult and you know what's better. I always tell people, if you and your child are thinking the same thing, then you have an unusually mature child, mm-hmm. or you're very immature yourself. One of those two, because, you know, if you got a 25, 30-year difference in age, the thinking is not going to line up. So you have to kind of weather that storm and just know that your kids will probably rebel and be upset with you during the teenage years at least, and maybe even into young adulthood. But if you have the faith that you're doing the right thing, we will come back around. And all those lessons, it kind of, a light bulb goes off, you know, as we get older and we experience life ourselves. And we're like, oh, that's what my mom was talking about, or my dad, or, you know, my grandparents. It just takes that time for us to find our way. But eventually we get it. But I think a lot of parents may be afraid to go through that middle passage phase where your kids kind of are upset with you.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was growing up, my parents made me go to my room so they didn't have to look at my face or see my tears. You know, they just really didn't care, just not in front of me, right? And I guess that helped them also, you know, like not to feel bad about what they did, you know. And then you have parents whoop your behind and say, well, it hurts me more than it hurts you. You know, those type of things go on too. So, well, it's good to hear that you have such a great mom, and being led by the Lord, knew exactly how to rear you up and train you. Because like they say, it's different to raise a child, and you must also train a child in the way that they should go. And when they get older, they will not depart. They will come back. So,
yeah,
you know, it takes just good parents and listening and being what you call have the spirit of discernment.
That is true. You know, I can't stress enough, you know, just how having a good parent, like, it shaped my whole life, you know, because
right.
You go through things, and we're all going to face adversity in life. That's just a part of life, and you have someone who's laid down a path for you and giving you some structure and a moral compass. You know, you will stray. That's just natural, but it gives you a roadmap to get back on track, and that's what we all need, and I think that's what's lacking. As I, to go out to certain, you know, these schools, and I'm dealing with the youth today, I think that there's just a lack of a roadmap right now, and some consistency that's causing some of the issues that we see in our community
mm-hmm.
and across the country, really. But parenting, it's everything. It really is. It's the hardest job in the world to have, but it's very important.
Yes, it is. It's very important. Because that's who we are, our character, you know. It's exactly who we are. And it says in the back of your book, it says, the secret love child of Columbia University and the cornerstone. He is currently writing and producing his first feature film and a TV show based on his life. So how's that coming along?
It's going pretty well. I have, I've gotten some good feedback from people in the entertainment industry who've seen the project. Of course, you have to kind of be careful when you're shopping projects, because someone can easily take the idea, you know, and run with it. So I haven't put it all the way out there, but the few people that I've shared it with have been very positive in their response to it, and it kind of covers the basis of what we've talked about in terms of me being from the city, going off to an Ivy League college, and then coming back to this environment. Like, okay, what have I learned throughout that journey, and how can I apply those lessons to make this place a little bit better than when I left it? So I think that universal theme of coming home and of evolution and of personal growth and identity, I think those are some of the things that have that I have working for me as far as the story is concerned, and it makes it appealing to a wider audience.
Okay, so are you trying to do like a sitcom?
No, it would be more like a live-action, single-camera comedy/drama. So not necessarily like a sitcom, but I'm trying to, let me think, let me give you an example. Something more like, say, like Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
the TV show, which is, that's a little bit more artsy, a little darker mm-hmm. than I'm planning to do my show. But in terms of just being, you know, it's shot in a very cinematic way. Like I said, single-camera, maybe 45-minute episodes, things like that. But, yeah, not sitcom, per se. That's not... I enjoy sitcoms, but I don't usually work in that medium. So I would want to do something more like Atlanta.
I don't think I've even watched Atlanta. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. That's kind of dark, and it's very... I like the show. It actually, coincidentally, the last episode airs tonight. The series finale, excuse me, is wrapping up after this fourth season. But let me think of another. Well, have you heard of, or have you seen, like, Insecure or Queen Sugar?
No, I haven't, but I think I get the gist of what you're saying. Is
okay.
It won't be one, it will be more than one episode.
Oh, yes,
okay.
Yes. Yeah, multi-seasons, hopefully, you know. Oh, for sure. Because there's a lot of things I want to cover. You know, again, just the kind of the contrast of the two worlds from, I don't know if I told you, but I actually live on the same street that I grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not the same neighborhood, the actual same street. Like, I grew up, you know, went away to college and traveled the world, and as fate would have it, I'm right back on the same street. And that's just, from a spiritual sense even, that's given me a lot of things to think about. Okay, you know, what am I doing here? You know, why am I back here? What was my purpose for everything that I've done, everything that I've learned throughout my journeys? What is it that brought me back here? And right. What is my task now that I am back here? So, yeah, I want to explore that way more than one episode. Hopefully, you know, if I am to be so blessed, I'll have to do multiple seasons of a show like that, that can truly tease out all of those story arcs and all of those ideas.
That's great. That's going to be very interesting. Very interesting. Wow.
Thank you.
Sounds good. It really does. You know, my sister always calls me and tell me about these new shows to watch. I'm a movie personality, you know, and I watch a lot of movies. And my little TV time, that's what I do. Or I'm listening to different preachers or, you know, what is those documentaries are called?
Mm-hmm.
Like Prophecy Watchers, and you know, that's where I spend my time mostly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, doing what I do here on the radio. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what I would love to do is do a movie first, because I'm like you. I like movies as well. I just think that there's a lot of material that you can't necessarily squeeze into just 90 minutes, but I would love to start with a movie and then take that movie, you know, use the movie to show that the idea has some legs and that people will be interested in it, and then take that same concept and push it over to the TV space. But I would love to do a movie first. I just think that there's, you know, well, there's two things. Once you have episodic content, you get to really explore the characters' lives and the characters' backstories and things like that. You can go a little further because you have weekly engagement. You get people talking about it on social media and in at work and at school and things like that. You kind of keep the conversation going. But also, given the current climate, you know, post-COVID, the industry is, everything's going to streaming platforms, and you probably have noticed that the theatrical content is kind of going down because, you know, people can't gather anymore, or they don't feel as safe as they were.
Mm-hmm.
And even just people's viewing habits have changed a lot since COVID. So people are going to streamers, and a little bit of details about the industry, not to go too far into that, but the streamers would like to have more episodic content because it keeps people coming back.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed, if you watch a movie on a streaming platform, you could theoretically just watch it and never come back.
True.
If you watch a TV show, they're guaranteed to have you for a longer period of time, and thus maybe get you to watch some other of their content. So that's kind of like where the industry is going in terms of all these streaming platforms. They're looking for episodic content.
Right, right. I know, because YouTube has really blown up. There's so many and so, you know, programs, and people are interior designing. You know, they have their business on there. You know, it's just really hyped up, and it's an avenue.
It is.
You know, and even though a lot of things closed down and put us at, you know, have to be protective about what we do, where we go, and that type of thing, but it opened up so many other avenues that people could take advantage of, you know, and I think people found themselves taking advantage of those different avenues, especially that YouTube.
Now, I'm on YouTube a lot. Without even paying attention to it, or I didn't even mean for this to be this way, but I spend more time on YouTube than I do watching actual TV. Most TV, I mean, I have my few favorite TV shows that I'll watch or I'll record on DVR, but outside of live sports, I think I'll probably be on YouTube just more often. But I'm like you, though. I'm watching documentaries and old, you know, intellectual debates where you had, you know, I think if you're really intellectual, which it sounds like you are, there's just, YouTube is almost like a visual encyclopedia.
It is.
You can look up any subject. If you love history and black history, you can just, I mean, oh, but you want to watch a Malcolm X speech or a Martin Luther King speech or a debate between intellectuals on the civil rights era, you can just really dive up into all that stuff. So I spend a lot of time on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Everything's on there. Anything you want to talk about, anything that you know that spikes your interest, it is on YouTube. It's just like Google, which I love.
Exactly,
also.
Exactly. You know, growing up, I used to have the, you remember the Encyclopedia Britannica, you know, I had those in my room, and I would always look through those whenever I was bored. So now YouTube just kind of takes the place of that. Instead of, you know, reading through everything, I can just look it up at my fingertips. You know, yeah. You have these smartphones and all these tablets and things like that. You can just, it's a personal library almost.
It is. You know, when I think about, you know, you're a senior, I'm sure, in age. But when I think about where we used to be and where we are now, I would never have fathomed that technology is, you know, out the roof. I mean, everything, like you said, is at your fingertips. And your phone is just as, it is a computer itself. I had a doctor tell me your phone can do more than most computers. I'm like, really?
Okay. No, you're right. It's funny because most people, you know, nowadays everybody likes to text. People don't even really like to talk on the phone. So it's almost like you don't even use the phone for the actual function of a phone anymore. Most everybody texts or emails or, you know, communicates that way. So we pretty much, the phone is only in name only. There's many computers that we're holding now.
Right. Yes, they are. What do you think has happened because of this new technology and because of we're being able to text and send photographs through the, you know, airwaves? And what has that done to hinder people from getting out and meeting other people?
I think that it diminishes our humanity a little bit because we have less contact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't talk to one another anymore. Everything, like I said, is a text message or a social media post. And I think that absent that connection and that contact that we used to have, I think there's less civility in the world because we're not relating to one another anymore like we used to. That's probably one of the biggest things that I see. There's just a lack of civility, more cynicism. We're not as polite. You know, it's just a lack of regard for your fellow person. I think we don't have that same sense of community and connection. And I think that's one of the, of course, technology. It makes things more efficient. We can do more stuff in faster, you know, amounts of time. But the flip side of that is that we lose the connection that we have and some of the respect that we have for each other. And I think you can kind of see that with, you know, back in the day, you could disagree. And that was just fine. It didn't mean that I hated you or you hated me. We just had different opinions. But now, I think one of the byproducts of this bipolarization that we have is that people just, you know, whether it be politically, socially, if someone has a different idea than you, then you have to attack them online and it gets real nasty and personal. So even, we can't even disagree anymore without, you know, really going to war with each other. And I think it affects the country in a negative way. And I think even within the black community, it affects us in a very negative way because we're really all we have. So we can't afford to fight each other to that degree, but that may be another topic.
Yeah, that is another topic. We are all we have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I would prefer that we not argue over tactics when we have the same goal in mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure if we all want the same thing, we could find a way, you know, to find some middle ground, but I think people argue so much over tactic and how we're going to, you know, what route we're going to take to get to the promised land, so to speak, mm-hmm. that we end up having these really, really bitter culture wars, and it just keeps anything from getting done. You know, we just can't even come together on anything, and that's frustrating.
Yes, that's very frustrating. So, elaborate on that a little more. We are all we have. Are you talking about as the African American race, or people as a whole?
I was speaking specifically. I think there is a collective of humanity that we're all we have. But I was thinking more in terms of African Americans. You know, we have such a unique experience in this country, and there's been some unique hurdles that we have to face that only we can really understand. Mm-hmm. You know, I have several close friends and relatives of other races, and I know that there's love, but there's not always that understanding because, you know, they haven't lived the things that we've lived. So the only person that's going to be able to truly understand what we go through will be each other. So if we're at each other's throats all the time, or if we're arguing over strategy and tactics without, and we lose sight of the common goal that we have, we just won't have time to get anywhere, you know. And that's, you know, and I think that's probably more in my mind because, of course, yesterday was election day, or I'm sorry, 2 days ago, and you know, it's just hard to even form a consensus around what we're going to do politically, what we're going to do socially. It's just hard to even get any kind of to get us to go in one direction, or enough of us to go in one direction that we can actually get legislation passed, or you know, solve a problem.
Right.
We're just so busy fighting each other, you know, again, and that's just frustrating because I think we all want to be better and to do better, but we need each other to do so.
Right. I never understand all the hostility myself and fighting and shooting and killing one another. What does that profit? It's sad.
And it's funny, that kind of leads me back to the subject of my book and why I even wanted to do it, is that I think when we just don't, the images that we see of each other are usually very negative, and it's just kind of hard to see your neighbor or your brother or your sister as a person of value when you're constantly being bombarded with images of them having no value. You know, I don't think peer pressure is just for children. Peer pressure is for all of us. We're all going to be subject to peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
All that really means is that we're being influenced by the things around us. You know, and I think if we're not careful, that can happen to anyone at any age. So, you know, if there's just negative perceptions of us on TV, negative perceptions of us on the radio, it's just hard, even though we may know better intellectually,
mm-hmm.
viscerally, we won't have the same value. Or we won't look at each other as having the same value. So it's very easy to be disrespectful, to be, you know, impolite, to be dismissive. And that's why I did this book, because I wanted to just counter the negative images with good images. Because I think we first have to see each other a certain way before we can treat each other a certain way.
Oh, yeah, that's key. Absolutely. And that goes for any person.
Sure.
No matter who they are or where they come from, their race, or, you know, if you devalue people, that's all you see.
Exactly. And I think that's really the goal of propaganda,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm going to call consistent negative images of any group, that's propaganda, because that serves the distinct purpose of making people look at them in a negative way so that it's okay to mistreat them, you know? And it first starts with other groups mistreating whoever's being portrayed in a negative light, but then once that continues, it will make people of that same group treat their own that way if they continue to see negative images of that group. So, you know, it's a big problem, especially, you know, with social media, because things can spread, images can spread, you know, the blink of an eye. You know, a picture can go viral, or a video, or a meme. These things can travel a lot further and a lot faster than ever before. So, you know, the damage can be done on a much larger scale than I think we were used to coming up.
That's true. And I became aware of this. He calls himself New Breed, and he's on YouTube a lot. And you may have run across him.
What's his name? I'm sorry.
He calls himself New Breed.
New Breed. Okay. I don't think I've heard of him.
Yeah, and he's spewing out these lies that Mary wasn't a virgin, and, you know, he believes in God, but he doesn't believe that his name was Jesus. And he's just in the minds of these young black men. You know, and that is something else I detest. If you don't know what you're talking about, you need to stop leading people astray. And I just, I have 3 grandsons. And they range from, I think, 33, 26, and 18. And some of them are very impressionable. because they want to believe that, you know, their peers has their best interest in at heart, and trying to tell them maybe something they don't really know, haven't heard of. They know how to dig at it. Oh, we're the original Jews, or, you know, Hebrews and all that type of thing. Now, have you heard about that that's going around?
You mean I hear recently with, like, Kyrie Irving and Kanye West and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and probably before them, because I first heard
about
it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm familiar with all of the coverage that's come, you know, here in the past couple of weeks around that. I personally don't know, I can't say I know much about the history of where that comes from, like the background of blacks being the original Jews and all that kind of stuff. I can't say I'm super well versed in that. But yeah, that's right now we're seeing that's been all in the news for the past 2 weeks every day. Mm-hmm. It got more covered than the election, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it's been all, you know, I'm a sports fan as well, so it's just, you know, it's been everywhere. And that's a whole, you know, that's a really complicated, you know, topic on that one.
It is very complicated, and they have the attention of a lot of young people who are their followers. I mean, these are rappers or former rappers, and, you know, they just really grabbed up, what, two or three generations from when rapping first started, you know. And these things also are divisive. And it comes and separates even families when you're talking about belief, you know, and what,
absolutely,
and what we were raised up in, you know, and belief.
Yes, that's a big problem when you have athletes and entertainers and celebrities and other people, I guess, in the social media era, we call them influencers. When you have them speaking on topics that they're not super well versed in, and I'm not someone who believes that just because you play a sport for a living or if you have an album out that you can't be smart. I don't want to reduce anyone to their occupation, right? But I know that you're not an expert in that field. No, your expert is in sports and entertainment. So it's frustrating that so many people will turn to non-experts for their intellectual, social, political, religious beliefs when most of these people aren't really qualified to speak on those. They can certainly have their opinions, that they're free to do that, but they're not thought leaders in society on these topics, and most of them are not well read and not well versed on these things. And just being famous alone puts you in kind of a bubble to where you're not even fully plugged into reality. You know, like you don't
right.
have the same experience as everyday people. So, yeah, I wish that people would just, you know, I wouldn't go to a chef for advice on how to fly a plane, and vice versa.
Right.
You know? So I don't know why, just on the surface, I would not listen to someone or follow someone who is not an expert in that field, you know? If you're not qualified to speak on it or to be an authority. Anyone can speak on anything, but I'm saying to be an authority on that subject,
right?
Then I'm certainly not going to, you know, pay it a whole lot of mind. But like you said, people are very impressionable. These are the people who they're watching, unfortunately. Athletes, entertainers, and celebrities are just much more cool than professors and, you know, preachers, and, you know what I mean? They're cooler, so they're going to have a different type of influence.
And not only that, you know, being African-Americans, and sometimes, you know, your experience through life, you may have been dismissed and looked down on and ridiculed by other races of people. And then you listen to how other races of people really talk to you. Not all, but there are some that can be very judgmental just by the color of your skin. And for our people to think that they're really nothing, well, we seem to be the most hated people in all the world. So What is there for me? How can I feel good about myself?
Yes. Yes. That is a, that's how most people become radicalized. You know, people who have been the downtrodden of society, people who have been cast aside and mistreated. It's very easy. It's, but when you have a low self-esteem, it's very easy to be manipulated by others. And that's what I think what you're speaking to is, it's even, you know, it bothers me even more because they're using that pain that someone has against them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're taking someone at their lowest point from a self-esteem aspect, and they're digging into that and they're misleading them, often for profit.
Mm-hmm. Right. For profit. Their profit.
Yeah, they're going to line their pockets with your low self-esteem. You know, as Dale Hughley always says, that's how bad we need to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
That we'll take some bad medicine and listen to some bad things and hold on to it because we've been made to feel so low in our lives
that
we're almost receptive to anything that we can grab onto.
Right, to make us feel good about ourselves and who we are, you know, like, because you can't change who you are. You can't change how you came here or who your parents, God chose your parents to be, and but you can change your future. You can pick up and dust yourself off, encourage yourself, educate yourself. You know, I speak to young people that way and my grandsons because I have four daughters and, I just thank God he blessed me with some grandkids, grandsons, I put it like that. So, very proud of them, very encouraging, and, you know, I always give them heads up, like Damon Mosley. You know, I might not can get their attention too well, but I do share a little bit about, you know, young men that are doing something great, you know, and trying to encourage them and lift them up, and, oh, you can do things like that too, you know, whatever you desire in your heart, if you just take one step, you can do that. So, and
sure, and I appreciate that. And trust me, it will sink in. You know, it's good that they have someone like you in their ear. Like I said before, it may not happen immediately, but you can best believe the fact that you're putting that out there, it will stick. It will definitely stick. And for our young black boys, we need it very much so because I want to make sure, you know, black women have all kinds of challenges, and I'm very proud of how they've overcome those challenges. Black boys just have a different set of challenges because we're considered to be such a threat. You know, there's like a physical fear aspect that kind of makes our world a little bit different, and how people attack us a little different. And you know, we get pushed into these narrow confines. I think that we're pretty. If you look at, you know, mainstream culture, you'll see black women as doctors and lawyers and professional women and, you know, just really doing great things in academia, corporate America. But when you see black men, if we're ever portrayed at all, we're going to be portrayed as rappers, criminals, athletes, a very narrow, you know, range of careers and pursuits. And everyone else who's not doing that is considered corny or lame.
Damon,
so black boys need another layer.
We are out of time. Almost. For this hour. You call back at 11:20 for your second hour.
Okay.
Thank you so much for listening to A Voice of a People. Our guest, Damon Mosley, will be back at 11:20. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims live on WGH Talk. Till next time, be blessed.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. For people like legendary comedian Shecky Green telling the funniest talk show story of all time about guest starring on Fantasy Island.
I was late.
Yes.
And as I always am for everything I do. And anyway, they were waiting for me. And he came up to me. He said, I want to tell you something. Did you know you made this way? You know, I said, well, I'm very sorry. And I didn't realize my call was for later and everything. Then I sat down and his wife came up to me. And she said to me, Shecky, I'm everybody's wife. They had just gotten married, by the way. And she said, beautiful girl. And she said to me, would you like a cup of coffee? I said, I would love it, thank you. And he says, listen, I want to tell you, don't talk to my wife, that's my wife. You understand? I don't want you to talk to my wife again. That's my wife. And I'm going to kill you. So I says, he's going to do what to me? You know.
Oh, man.
And then Ricardo says, I want to tell you, Shaky, with another accent, I want to tell you, don't pay any attention to him. Just pat him on the head 3 times.
And the producer told you that he had a gun.
Oh, yeah,